want to begin, and we're in the middle of fascinating material. But is there any beginner? I see attendance is sparse. Excuse me? Okay. We're dealing here with Minhag Mavata Halacha, and we made the point that when it comes to Dinim Mamonot, there can be no question that a minhag can determine what you want to do. Because in halacha, there's no isa v'heter involved. However, when it comes to isa v'heter, here we saw that the concept of minhag mavatal halacha cannot be taken literally. And perhaps the best interpretation of the minhag mavatal halacha is the Bavli. When the Bavli speaks of Fukhazi Maya Madvar, so what the Bavli means is if you have a machloket and if you're in doubt, then the minig of the people and the way they observe becomes the determining factor in the halacha. Now, there's no question that what I stressed last week when we dealt with the conservative movement. And I was happy to hear that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik says, my classmate, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, said exactly the same thing. That this concept of saying, Minik Mavata Halakha Fuk Hazim Ahmad Davar, and justifying every change imaginable, is halachically totally without any relevancy. All the examples in the Gemara, we'll have more today, are where people are concerned with the halacha. And imagine, these are people concerned with what bracha you make, what's the bracha rishona, what's the bracha achrona. When we're concerned with such Jews, then minhag can determine the halacha. And this is the way the Rush learns pshat, and I showed you that there's an entire tshuva of the Rashbash dealing with chlitzer and sandal and manol. And there too, once a certain minig determines that this is a shoe and this is what people are wearing, so that establishes the halacha. Since it uses the word nal in the Torah, we don't know what's for sure what a nal means, and you all know there are all types of shoes. They're hush puppies, they're leather shoes, they're wooden shoes, they're sandals. So what really is a nal? And here the minhag determines what a nal is. But it's not that the minhag will abolish any halacha which is firm and clear. And this is exactly the way the Rashbash learns Pshat. And I said to you as well that even with the Gemara that the conservative movement cites, at least the knowledgeable conservative rabbis and Solomon Shechta, the Sugyim Psachim, Dach Samach Vav, Amid Aleph, Samach Vav, Amid Bet, so wherever the Gemara talks about Amlo Neviyim, Chim Bnei Neviyim, yes, it means intuitively the Jews somehow know what to do, can pass on a tradition. And even if the rabbis have forgotten what the paskin, smoch al b'nei Yisrael im lo neviyim him b'nei neviyim. And this is why I cannot accept the conservative tshuva that Fukhazi, and this is why I said to you, and I don't know, no one can prove me right, no one can prove me wrong. And you know that I'm no admirer of the conservative movement. But I, as a student of Jewish history, I cannot believe that Solomon Schechter thought it out to its end. Because when all is said and done, we have a lot of anecdotal evidence that Solomon Schechter was Shomer Shabbat and Kashrut and Tarat Mishpacha. I don't say he put on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, but he certainly was the outward appearance of an orthodox Jew. In his doctrines, there's no question that he speaks of development of halacha, and as I've told you more than once, whenever someone uses the word development, I have my reservations. That's why I'll always use the word history of halacha, or dynamics of halacha. But, nevertheless, he was a committed Jew. And this is why I say rabbis in the pulpit, out in the field, they're under unbelievable, relentless pressure. And he didn't think it out to the end. The rabbis were complaining, so they were matir mixed pews, they were matir davening in English. Again, compared to Chilul Shabbos, perhaps it was easy to be matir this. I don't want to give out grades to mitzvah because I also know Pirkei Avot Tavi Zahir b'mitzvah kalat v'chamura. I understand it very well. It's not the time to go into Pirkei Avot now, but I understand it very well. When you start to be mezalzel in mitzvah, that is the end. So that's what I believe happened, and then the conservative movements, as it developed and as it grew, and as time passes on, and as I've said more than once, and I said it very clearly last night, and I think it's a golden point, we live in a dual environment, and democracy teaches us certain concepts, and Torah has certain concepts. And unless we teach the next generation that when Torah and democracy conflict, we have to surrender to Torah, then of course we have a conservative movement. And I don't blame them. Frankly, the minute you permit women to sit mixed with men, and then it takes 20 years, they want to be called to the Torah. Then if they're called to the Torah, why can't they be rabbis? And if they're rabbis, why can't they be chazaniyot? It's all logical from the point of view of democracy. The only problem is that this has nothing to do with Torah logic and everything I spoke about last year. We did the Rav's concept of Pasha Korach, for those of you that recall. So anyway, those were the words I wanted to say about the conservative movement. But now I want to come back here and continue the Fuk Chazi. Now, what's interesting too is that we find already in the Rishonim. See, the Frumkeit binge of today is nothing new. Jews have always had, again, if you take Torah seriously, if you love Torah, then of course it's easier to be machmir than to be mekel. All of you are familiar with the Gemara, it's in Beitz and many other places, koach da teira dif. And of course, koach da teira means that one has to have a great deal of learning. Without a great deal of learning, it's easy to be machmir. Mitzara suffix, you be machmir. And this is rampant in our writings and responsible literature. And time and again, we spoke about it many weeks ago. Rabbanim said others should join with me. I'm afraid the paskim alone help carry the beams away. And koach da teira dif. Now, already in the Rishonim, you see when you talk about fuk hazi, don't think it's only to be machmir. It's even to be mekel. In other words, this concept of B'nai Yisrael deciding when you have a question in halacha and you're in doubt, the Fuk Chazi applies Bein L'chumra and Bein L'kula. And this is a magnificent concept. Look into the Kabbalat Tanel on the Rush. We're talking Mesechet Shabbat, Perik Yud Dalet, Sif Bet in the Rush, and Ot Tet in the Kabbalat Tanel. And it's dealing there with making salt water on Shabbat, right? There's a whole problem with making salt water. Our minigits, if we have to make salt water, we have to do it the opposite way, the way we do during the week. In other words, we should, during the week, we put the salt in first, then the water. On Shabbat, you would have to put the water in and then the salt, etc. But he says, V'lismolcha al-haminag, v'lo al-halacha. And he says clearly that in this case, you can be somach on the minhag, that there's a much like it here, and even if people are mekil, if this is their minhag, they have every right to be mekil. Similarly, we have in the Yazarua, a very, very interesting topic. The Yazarua, I'll quote you from where it is, I'll tell you what the sukkah is, Chelek Aleph from the Yazarua, Hilchat Tefillin, Siman, Taf, Kuf, Samach, Zion. In the Yasaru, Chelek Aleph, Hilchat Tefillin, Tafkuf, Samach Zayin. And what's the question here? It's a question based upon the Gemara in Menachot, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Bet. All of you know that Menachot, for whatever the reasons are, this is why Shas, in order to find anything in Shas, it doesn't follow a logical order. You have to put Shas backwards and forwards, to be shown them the way to find everything. That's why we need indices to find topics in Shas. But in Menachot, it's in the middle of a big sugya. You know what sugya I'm talking about? Tzitzit and tefillin. It's mainly our main sources for tzitzit and tefillin are right there in that sugya in Menachot. So they deal with an interesting question. We are, Baruch Hashem, wealthy people. All of us, the poorest person in this room, we are real wealthy people. What do I mean by that? You're putting on tefillin, and suddenly Jason notices his ritzua is ripped. Ritzua is ripped. So what do? The first thing you do, you head over to Meir Sharim, you buy a new ritzua, no big deal. Years ago, people weren't so wealthy. What did they want to do? They wanted to sell the ritzua. So the Gemara says, can you sew the ritzua? It won't look nice. So the Gemara says, fine, you'll sew it, and you'll turn the sewing part underneath. So the Gemara is not clear. And the Gemara says, shot him. So there's an opinion in the Gemara, shetehei kshiratama, it should look beautiful. When you're tired, it has to be one knot, everything has to be strong and hold together. So the Gemara raises the question, mahu lemitrafei v'ayel letfira legava? What about if you have to sew the ritzua together and you turn the stitches on the inside so it'll look nice from the outside? Is that still a kshira tama? So the Gemara answers, fuk hazi mai ama tava. Go see what the people do. Look into Rashi, look into Tosfot. There's a machleket Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi says, fuk hazi. And Rashi says, Kivan de Nohagin Kane, since no one does this, so we don't do it, it's Asa. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, if people were Nohag like this, we can be Mekil. So it's interesting. Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam already are arguing, what did people really do? But you know what's amazing about the Yazarua? The Yazarua says, Bein Lahakil, Bein Lahachmir, Chazimaya Madava. When we put down this concept that we have to determine the halacha, bein lahakel, bein lahachmiya. You don't, it's not only something for frumkeit. It's not something where you say, I want to be machmiya. No, we honestly don't know what to do. It's honestly a machloket. Go out and see what the people are doing. And go out and see whether they're machmiya or whether they're mekil. And you have every right to follow whichever way you want, l'chumra or l'kula. Now, there's another Razarua, again, in a very interesting topic. It's something that some of you have never thought about. And here I'm quoting from the Razarua in Hilchot Shabbat, Simin Ayin Chet, Ot Yud, and here he's dealing with the Gemara in Shabbat, Kuflamet Chet Amid Bet, the sugya of ha sina'ah. You know what I'm talking about? What's a sina'ah? A peaked cap. And the question is, if the peak is large, you're making a tent on Shabbat. Every time you put the peak cap on, you're making a tent. Right or wrong? Are you allowed to open an umbrella on Shabbat? And that's the shaila of the Gemara when it's talking about a peaked cap. And there too, the Gemara remains in doubt, fuk hazi, and the Yazarua says clearly that if they're mekil, afilu lekula, you can be somach on the people in the streets. And this is the shail of a peak cap on Shabbat. Now, generally speaking, our peaks are not that large, but I've already seen caps that have more than who knows how long they can have, funny caps, guaranteed to keep the sun out of your eyes. Rain caps, there can be all types of caps. It's Takara Shaila with Shabbat. Can you wear it? It's a tent. Where is it different than an umbrella? What about if you open an umbrella before Shabbat? Same Shaila. All of you know that even if you open an umbrella before Shabbat, it's not going to help because when you lift it into the air, it's not the etzem opening of the umbrella. That's a different Shaila. That's a Shaila of Boine, Makaba Patish. It's a different Shaila. Follow me? But even if you've opened it and you leave it open, are you allowed to lift it up and walk away with it? And that's the Shaila. There already you're really making a tent in the sky. It's probably Binyan. By the way, I have to tell you in parentheses that in one of the Batei Midrash, the scientific Jewish houses of study in Europe, I don't know which one, it's before my time, but I remember I heard from the Rav, and I knew about it. You know, again, these things travel. I start to realize that every generation is passing on a different Mesorah to a certain degree, because the anecdotes are different. What we saw in our youth is not what the Rav saw in his youth, and what Rav Moshe saw in his youth, what Rav Chaim saw in his youth, but we have to pass on to you what we saw in our youth, and what the Rav told us about. So, these people consider themselves from, maybe it was the Vienna-based Medrash, but they're very scientific, and their professor of Talmud was matir using an umbrella on Shabbat. As long as he opened it before Shabbat, he was matir that the etzem minyan of boina was boina when you opened it, and once you opened it, it's open. It doesn't matter if it's lying on the floor, you're carrying it in your hand. And some of these people came in Aliyah, and all over the world you can see these proper Jews walking on Shabbat with their taliyot on and frum and everything, and going with an umbrella on Shabbat. You see, today you don't see it. There's no one in the world I know of that's mekil to go with an umbrella on my Shabbat, but there is a whole literature on that, including the Teferet Yisrael, if I'm not mistaken, if I recall correctly. Mamash on the Sugya of Sinai. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite stories, and I told this story when I did Reconstructionism many years ago, a number of years ago, but one of my favorite stories is the Mordechai Kaplan story. You fellas didn't know Mordechai Kaplan, but I still knew Mordechai Kaplan in the flesh. He was an unbelievable, charismatic teacher, always teaching. He was a born teacher, a magnificent teacher, and a very interesting individual, lived a very long life, and his final years lived right around the corner from BMT, and I once gave him a lift in my car, and he tried to show me his fringes, his tzitzit, to show me he's from civilization, and all the narishkeit. Anyway, one time he comes to shul, and he takes off his coat, and they take a look in his Reconstructionist Jewish Center on 86th Street. He has two handkerchiefs tied around his neck. So they say to him, "Professor Kaplan, how come you're wearing handkerchiefs, you know?" He says, "I don't carry on Shabbat. My father didn't carry, my grandfather didn't carry. This is part of the Jewish civilization." Fine, everyone's impressed. Wow, this is really something. Not only eating kosher, but not carrying on Shabbat. Part of the Jewish civilization, Mark. A few weeks later, there's a tremendous rain, as they can be in New York, as they can be in Yerushalayim. The rain is pouring, and there's Mordechai Kaplan marching through the west side of New York with a big umbrella. So a kid goes over to him, a chutzpah, and he says, "Professor Kaplan, 2 weeks ago you told us you don't carry, you wear the handkerchiefs around your neck. What are you doing with this umbrella?" And Mordechai Kaplan, without skipping a beat, answers, "For a civilization, you don't get sick on Shabbat." And he continued walking with the umbrella. But that's the Yazaruah by Sinai. And he also implies that even to be Mekil, you can follow the Fukhazi. It's not only Lechumra, but it's Lekulah as well. Ebavontas. Now, what's also interesting, very interesting minhag brought down in the Sefer Hayasha of Rabbeinu Tam. I'm not certain what the pshat is. I can interpret it either way. I've tried to check it out. Other rabbi, if some of you learn with Rabbi Lichtenstein, ask him if he has if he knows what the pshat is right here. But I'll tell you what the Sefer Yashar is. First of all, you know who the author of the Sefer Yashar is? Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, we're dealing here with Rashi's grandson, one of the Gedolei Balei Tosfot, the Rabbeinu Tam. So in the Sefer Yashar, and we have an edited edition today. We have it was edited already 100 years ago, the Rosenthal edition. It's a very important, I don't have to tell you, the Sefer Yashar. Siman Tar Chab, Tav Reish Chaf Bet. So he brings down as follows, I'm quoting him. V'yod shenashim shalanu minhag biyadam lechabot ulahadlik. V'ani reiti beinai v'yashalam Vatomana came, v'yemeinu neviyot, b'not neviyot hein. First of all, it's a good quote to quote, because in the world, again, you're not sensitive, but having taught women since 1971, I'm very sensitized to the needs of the modern woman. So this is a beautiful quote. Not only b'nei neviyim hein, but here's Rabbeinu Tam, v'yemeinu neviyot, b'not neviyot hein. You follow me? You have it right in feminine form. Now, what's he talking about here? Obviously, he's talking about lighting the candles Friday night. And it seems they lit the candles and they blew them out. Now, why did they do it that way? And he asked them, "What are you doing?" And they said, "Our mothers did it, our grandmothers did it." You follow me, Ellie? They answered him, "This is the minhag." And he answered very beautifully, "Imlo neviyim heim b'nei neviyim heim," in feminine form. And you see here too, don't discourage them. B'samach on the minhag, encourage them, etc. Now, what is the pshat here? I can learn. What would you say is the pshat? Let me ask you, Jason. What do you say the pshat is? Why did they light it and blow it out and light it again? I can learn two different pshatim. One pshat, and this is Taka Minig Yisrael today, although I don't do it, I have to say I don't do it, but I've seen many good men do it. Did you ever see men? They get the candles ready for their wives. They light them, they blow, they check that everything is in order, that it's clean, that they help with the mitzvah, and then the women light the candles. I don't do it for many reasons, but to be honest with you, for 25 years I've never been home with candle lighting. I've been at the kotel already. So it's not shaykh I should do it. But I don't know, somehow I never picked up this minute. It would be, you know, again, I feel bad. I spoke about it last night, I speak about it now. There's so much I would have loved to ask the Rav. And I would like to ask Rebbe, did you do this? Did you ever see this minhag? Because I've seen it in many good homes. I see Yosef is shaking his head that he knows what I'm talking about. That the man joins with the mitzvah, it's called Dishan HaMenorah, before the Hadlakat HaMenorah. Ka'ein, what went on in the Beit HaMikdash. You follow me, Shlomo? Dishan, then Hadlakat. But it may mean that that's what the women did. Why? To check that the wick is working. I can tell you with Reb Heschel Shechter that you all know if Reb Heschel is the topic of discussion and he turned down Karen Viavna, and you all know he's a gon and he's a tzaddik, and I saw in his, I'm now going through his Eretz HaTzvi, I see he's making the same boast, I hate to say it, exactly what I boast to you about my class on the Rav, that I give over to Rav's Torah with all the Makarat. So I see he has Kuntresim in there, which is the Rav's Torah, and he says, but I added the Makarat. You follow me? Just like on Raket, but he's added the Makarat. So I see I'm not the only one making that post. And I'll tell you about Heshi Shechta. There's one thing he doesn't do. One thing, one Chumrah that he does not do. Well, who knows? You're looking at me that the Rebbe is a tzaddik, a gon. One thing he doesn't do. Well, excuse me? No. I'm dealing here with menorah, something I know. I don't know with klisheni. Maybe he's not machmen a klisheni. That I don't know. But I can, do you know he's not machmen? I don't know. But I know something that I know. What do I know? Years ago, he asked me, what do you do? You know, the worst thing in the world is olive oil menorahs. I have such heartache lighting it and until it catches and the wick and I have this. And he finally, it has to be the mid-60s, he told me he got so disgusted, he says, he had so much aggravation, he's only lighting candles. That's all. He can't be Yotzei Lemahadin, and unless he changed. Now what I have to tell you, I soaked the wicks for a year. You have no idea my shtick with lighting. I have the wicks soaking. Now I get them so soaked. And generally speaking, I have no tzaras. But after Salachas, Erev Shabbos, when I'm going to the kotel and I have to light after the plug, that's when I have the most trouble. The malach comes down and I'm going crazy. So this is why there is this minhag to lechat dishun haminora so that your wife can light. That may be one pshat. What's the other pshat? I don't know. I have another pshat, a very simple pshat. And gentlemen, I tell my girls a million times, I tell this to them, I tell it to you, hadlakat neirot, those two little candles you light, are barely the kiyum of the mitzvah. The zman hazeh, the kiyum of the mitzvah, is the electric light. That's the light we're really near there. That's the light I told you more than once, the more light the better. This Friday night I felt like a damn fool because I was out with my daughters Friday night. My wife is not home now, certainly, but I'm every Friday. So I knew my grandsons would come home with me, my two older grandsons, so I left the time clock on for the lights to go on at 8 o'clock. We walked into the house, 5:30, we walked into a dark house. I tell you, that's not a kiyum of Onik Shabbos. All right, the lights went on 10 minutes later. But those 10 minutes we were in the dark was not right. I should have left it on. I misjudged the time. I didn't realize we'd be home from the kotel so early. We'd eat so early. We'd get away so early. All right. Now, what do you have to do? What you have to do is when you're ready to light candles, because you'll say to me, but the electric lights are on. Of course they're on. We don't live in darkness. Baruch Hashem, we're wealthy people. We're living in the 21st century. Ashreinu. It's daylight here. It's dark outside. And the don't take it for granted. Where I work, the table in which I've written so much Chidushei Torah, that table has, they should make a coffin for me. Baruch Be'ezrat Hashem, that's a beautiful thought. They, on Gedolei Israel, they used to make the coffin out of the tables. They wrote on. Oh, it's a beautiful thought. Here they bury you without a coffin, so that's Minish Telfin. But I want you to know, that table, there's so much, that table, that Arangazap, that Zeful Kedusha Shem. So I sit there with three fluorescent lights overhead. Yaakov was in my house. Yosef, you can put three fluorescent lights. I have daylight at 1 a.m. in the morning. So it means the covered Shabbos, turn off the lights and turn them on again. So I can interpret it either way. I don't know which interpretation is correct. Maybe both of them are correct. But, you see, look at the word. It's not so important, but ועוד שאנשים שלנו, מנהג בידם לחבות ולחדליק. לחבות ולחדליק would imply that my second interpretation is correct. That I turned off the lights and relit all the lights lekavod Shabbat. It could be, if the first interpretation would be correct, lahetiv or ledashen ulahadlik. But it doesn't matter. Whichever way is right, what's beautiful is that here you have another source, im lo neviyotein, but not neviyotein. And it's a beautiful source in Rabbeinu Tam, and it's exactly the same concept. And this is minhag. Here, of course, I can't say it's a minhag mafat halacha, establishes halacha, but you see the importance, smoch al b'nei Yisrael, im lo neviyim, and even the women, im lo neviyot, they're just as good as the men in their halacha. And this is a classic case. Now, yes, yes, Jay. We'll come to it later today. Relax. And we'll come to it later today. I'll answer that later when I get to the Nachlut Shiva. Okay? Let me move one by one. I'll get there later today. I know you asked the question after class, and I said I would handle it today and give you a source, and you're asking a good question. But we'll come there in a few minutes. Now, however, I want to show you something interesting. With all that I've said, that ein hachinami minhag cannot be mavatal halacha, and in isav heter it means when there's a rifayon and when you're a dad, and all the sources I brought down. But I want to tell you something. There is one source that it could very well be that minhag is mavatal halacha. Do you know where? In a din d'rabbanan. See, it's interesting. And this gets us in, you see. We'll come to it later this term. One has to have a feeling for what's the oraita and what's the rabbanan. This course, this particular year, see, the other years, I give certain years here that are very dramatic, that have gained Baruch Hashem, people still quote the lectures to Herzmi and Aguna and Mamzerud. It's true, it's dramatic, it's beautiful. I'm proud that a little Bronx boy like myself, a Joe DiMaggio fan, I, by the way, the statistics I quoted last night were correct. You should know. I went home and checked it in the baseball Bible. I wanted to be sure, you know, when I said 361 lifetime home runs, I wanted to be sure I was right. I was right. But I'm very proud of those lectures. But these lectures this year give you the ma'of. It gives you a certain understanding that is so basic to halacha, which we rarely get in a yeshiva, even if we learn 10 years of shas, but we don't see the ma'of of Torah and how it works. And it's very something very fascinating. It could very well be in a derabbanan that a minhag can go against the halacha. Now, you'll ask me why. I'll explain why in a few minutes. Let me give you the one example I know of, a classic example already in the Rishonim. In the Rishonim. It's in the Raifat. It's in the Raifat. Now, all of you know, and we alluded to this, we quoted this Gemara last week. We alluded to it, but now I want to zero in on it. All of you know that midioraita, what is chayav in Trumat and Maisrat? Echol machloket rishonim, but basically speaking, dagon v'tirosh v'yitzar, everything else is the rabbanon. Look into the Rambam Hilchot Maisa, Perek Aleph, Halacha Tet. Here the Rambam said something, hacharuvim. What a charuvim we determined last week. Caribs or St. John's bread. Was there another word you gave me for it? I don't recall. Charuvim. And you know what? It's just amazing to me how this description we're going to see now is so true today. Charuvim eino chayab mei maisrat ela midivreihem. Lefi she'einon maichel ravadam. So the Rambam puts down right away that caribs or St. John's bread are not chayav in maisa because most people don't eat them. Now you know what's amazing to me? You can walk by on farms and in all different types of areas and you'll see charuvim all over the ground and no one takes them. And that's amazing to me. Now I am an exception to the rule. I love Ruvim, they're sweet, they're delicious, and when Tu B'Shvat comes, I don't know, for a few shekel, you can get enough Haruvim to eat for half a year. My problem is that my wife throws them at me, because as much as I love them, she can't stand it, spitting out the pits. She goes crazy, calls me a Sfardi, and every other epithet that you can imagine, because I'm sitting there. Did you ever see the Sfardim walk through the streets? It was part of my culture shock when I came in Aliyah. In the mouth, out the floor. Guy is walking on Shabbos, leaves a trail behind him all the way to the Kotel from Rehavia. He has left 22,000 garinim by which you can follow his trail. So Haruvim remind my wife. But I love it. I'm the exception. Most people taka, let it lie around. So the Rambam says it's not chayav in Maishrut, only mid the Rabbanim. The Raibit attacks him completely. The Raibit says, what are you talking about? Om Avram, Aflo Shari Lona, Chutz Mi Tirish V'Yitzah, that the Eger Din and Tumat and Maishrut is Tirish V'Yitzah, what I explained to you before, and that's why Haruvim are not chayav in Tumat and Maishrut, but not for the tum that the Rambam gives. Okay, fine. Be it as it may, I don't know whether the Raibit is right, the Rambam is right, it's not that important now. What is important, that we all agree, Haruvim are not Chayuv in Trumat, in Maisrat, Midioraita, only the Rabbanan. Now, what's the din by trees? When does the Chiyuv come? The Chiyuv comes the minute they turn ripe, the minute they ripen. That's when the Chiyuv comes, and you have to figure the year within the year that they ripen. What's the Chiyuv by vegetables? There it's batalikita, when you gather it in. Now, look what the Rambam paskens lahalacha. Hilchat maise sheni v'netter ravai. Perek Rishon, Halacha Gimel. For Haruvim, Afal Pisha Chantu, even though they ripened before, Peroteihem, Afal Pisha Chantu, Peroteihem, Kodim Tu Bishvat, Maisrin Lahaba, Hoel, Umitasrat, Midifrei Sofrim. What a psak of the Rambam. Do you hear what the Rambam is saying here, Shlomo? Meika Hadin. When do you have to consider it the year in which to give Trumat Maishrat from the Haruvim? It has to be within the year before the Tu B'Shvat, before the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot, the year in which they ripened. But look what happens. They ripen for the sake of argument in Kislev, and people don't eat it, don't take it off the tree, don't bother collecting it in Tulada. So you see what the Rambam paskins? You give the Trumat Maisrat according to the latter date. And look into the Hasagit of the Raibit on it, and he says, Kivin the Maisilun with the Rabbanan, Inagu Shelo Kedin, Lo Michu B'Yadam. Vahatam shanogu b'charuvim achalikita v'alnohugu b'sharil yonot efshe mipnei sharov halon ein ratzim achareim kishan peirat umenichim oto b'yalan habay lefikach lo nechshavu b'neihem ad shat lakita mikom akom v'hayalan minhag v'heichidanag nohug v'heichidalanohug lo nohug v'holchim achachanata. And that's a unbelievably important raita. And now let me explain the raita to you. First of all, if I may quote from Isidore Twersky's classic volume, The Ra'abar of Poskia. And I know what I'm quoting. I know that some of you right away are thinking, what's the Rebbe trying to do after Reb Chaim's critique? But I want to tell you something. Reb Chaim's critique is devastating. It's true. But there are only two problems with Reb Chaim's critique. Number one, in general, there isn't a human being alive that can live up to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's standards. Let's face it. The man was blessed with a Soloveitchik mind. He has mastered the world of Torah and the world of Chochmat Yisrael. He has not married. He has no wife to drive him crazy. No children to take away his time. No grandchildren to take away his time. So no one can master up to his standards. Scholarship has to be judged by mortal standards. You want to prove Saul, when he was dean of the Bernard Weber Graduate School, how many people got advanced degrees? You understand? There's a reason I had to ask him to step down. You can't run a graduate school without graduates. And the same thing, if a person takes a smicha b'china, imagine you get an 88. You're still going to get smicha. Ah, you only got an 88, that means 12% of the time you're going to paskin incorrectly? No, it means that you're going to try harder, but we're only humans. That's number one. Number two, the original Rabbi Rapolsky year appeared in 1961. Considering the standards of Jewish scholarship at that time, Professor Tversky's book was legendary. It made an unbelievable impact. It showed what could be done. Now we can do better. Now we know more. Now we have more Talmidei Chachamim in Chochmat Yisrael in 1961. How many first-rate Talmidei Chachamim did you have in Chochmat Yisrael? Okay? So please, with all the critique, don't take away the importance of the book within the context of 1961. I gained so much from that volume. It opened my eyes to the ability of someone to combine the worlds of Talmud Torah and Chochmat Yisrael on the high level. And with all the critique, and I'm not denying the critique, and I read the critique, and I saw the critique, and I know the rumors that he's now working on Professor Tversky's book on the Rambam. All right, Chaim is Chaim. He stands in a class unto himself. But we are only B'nai Adam. V'yamati b'chavzi, kol Adam kol zev. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't be proud to be a human being. Now, one point that Professor Tversky made that opened my eyes. When we went to yeshiva, time and again, what did we learn right away? Again, and I'm guilty, but I was a Rebbe too, teaching young kids Gemara and Rambam and Raiva. The first thing, Rambam Paskid, the Raivid beats the hell out of him. And we always call it the Raivid's criticisms on the Rambam. The first thing that Professor Tversky taught me is that many times the Raivid is not criticizing the Rambam. It's a gloss on the Rambam. It's an addition to the Rambam. You follow me? Bear that in mind, Saul. If you teach them the BMT boys, never use the word, never give them the opinion that the Raivid is always critical. Sometimes he is. Sometimes it's an addendum, it's a gloss, and you have to be attuned to it. Now, the Raibid I just read to you now is a beautiful example. Is he arguing with the Rambam? Absolutely not. He's not arguing with the Rambam, but what the Ra'abad is doing is what the Rambam put down in one sentence, he is elaborating. And the Rambam says very quickly, Hoel mitasrot mi divrei sofrim. We don't know what the Rambam is talking about. What's his problem here? Afal pi shachantu. We don't know what he's talking about. Look how fortunate we are that Evan walked in at this moment that he's able to hear the Ra'abad. And what is the Ra'abad doing? He's elaborating on the Rambam and explaining the Rambam and taking that one word in the Rambam and making it crystal clear. And that's what he's saying. How do I know how to interpret the Rambam? I don't have to break my teeth. I just look at the Raibit, and the Raibit explains that Me'ika Hadin with Pharaoh that follows ripening. If the ripening was in December, how can you take off Tumat and Maisret on these Haruvim with what grew a year later and ripened after Tu Bishvat? But because people neglected it and left it on the trees and didn't care about it, and it only became important when they gathered it together, and since the whole concept of Tshumat and Maisrat on Haruvim is the Rabbanan, then it may very well be that a minhag can be mavatal a din the Rabbanan. Isn't that amazing? And since it's a din d'rabbanan, then the minhag can say, we want to give maisha as if it's vegetables. We treat it like vegetables. Klal Yisrael relates to haruvim like vegetables. And if that's the case, the minhag can shape the din d'rabbanan. And that's a magnificent concept. And the implication is that since a d'rabbanan, tlachatchilah is only a d'rabbanan. And whenever you get involved with the d'rabbanan, what is one of the underlying basic concepts? Ein gozrin gezeirah latzibur shein atzibur yecholam lamod ba. And all of you are familiar with sugyas and examples of this. Classic example being not yayin shogayim, but shemen shogayim, yitzah. The classic example being yitzah, where they tried to make a takana or a gezeirah and it didn't catch on. And look at the Rambam in Hilchot Mamrim right at the start, you'll see what I'm talking about. So there, the people by Minhag can determine the way the Gezeirah the Rabbanan will be observed. And that's the pshat in this Rambam and in this Rabbad. So it's interesting. Now, if somebody says to you, Minhag Mavatal Halacha, so look how we have to answer. In Dinei Mamonet, absolutely, because the Halacha there is Mamonet and it's given over to Minhag. In Nisa Vahetta Chas V'Chalila, all it means that a minhag can determine the halacha when we're not certain what the halacha is, when there's a machloket ha-poiskim, a machloket ha-marayim, a machloket ha-noyim, fuk ha-zimayim ha-dava, im lo nevi'im heim b'nei nevi'im, or how did the Rabbeinu Tam put it, im lo nevi'otein, b'not nevi'otein. But it may very well be that din the Rabbanon, a minhag can play a bigger role. And it might actually circumvent or subvent or move into a different lane the original takana or the original gezeira, which is at the Rabbanon. And originally it may have been in the Chanata, but if the people went bata lakita, then according to the Rambam and according to the Raibad, we follow the people going bata lakita. Now, this is the only instance I know of it, the only major source I can give you, but it's a very powerful source, because you're dealing here with the Rambam and the Raifat. Okay, and obviously, we'll come back to this when we deal with Psak and the Rabbanan, etc. But I see there's some questions. I'll open it to questions. Jason, yes? Well, no. Jason, what I was meaning to show you, it ain't goes ring gezeira, you didn't follow my conclusion. I might have gone too quickly. It means that a din the Rabbanan has to mesh with the way people live. People's lifestyle has to be taken into consideration. And since the people were machshav de lakita and not the chanita, therefore the minhag has to follow that. That's what it means. That's what I meant to say. No, you're right. What does it apply here? What does it matter if you're given chanita or this? You're asking on a rabbinic level, right? Fine. Right, Jason. Right. Well, no. Seder. But when the Rabbanan is clearly defined, you see, here you're dealing with a different problem. You're dealing with a problem that you have to take with the Maestro. The question is how. And logically speaking, a Harub should be like a Pri. But if people treat it like a Yerik, we treat it like a Yerik. But what you're saying is, what about when there's a clearly defined Gezerat Samamin? So I'll tell you. Even there's a lot of room for the people. And I'll tell you how. And I'll tell you over something beautifully in the name of the Rav. If I never said this before, you, Sal, you had your reward for coming tonight, what I'm about to say. You'll never forget the rest of your life in Pasuking Shailah. It's meridic. I heard it in the name of the Rav when all the eulogies were being said. So someone told me this and I was just ibigarashed with the depth. You know, and the Rav, it's typical Rav. So simple and so deep. I'll show you right where it applies. There's a gzera you can't take medicine on Shabbat. When can you take medicine? When nofel mishkav, right? Right? You with me? You know the halacha. When a person is nofel mishkav, he's allowed to take medicine. What's the gzera? That shema you'll make the medicine yourself, you'll pound the medicine yourself. So of course, Pizman has said, it's a very difficult gzera to live with because as you said, no one pounds their own medicine. Although when I came in Aliyah, I have to tell you, back in 1969, I walked into a drugstore, I thought I was walking into a 1930 movie. I couldn't believe my eyes. All types of ingredients and the pounding it together. 1969, 70. Now, Baruch Hashem, Israel, you know, you go into a drugstore here, you think you're in England, you think you're in the United States, you know for sure you're not in Russia or Poland. That's obvious. So Shechitat Samamim, you're saying, who's going to make salt? The people. But a gzeira is a gzeira. Now, how do you define Nofel Mishkav?
And you see, here, it's very interesting. 100 years ago, I guarantee you, the definition of Nofil the Mishkav would have been much more chamur than it is today. Why? Because today, we're mefunakim. Barry grew up in Muncie, his parents doted over him, he never lacked for anything, the slightest headache, his parents went crazy. Think what I'm saying. So you see, Jason, the people play a role. Now, you know what the Rav Paskin? Rebbe was asked, how do you Paskin? So the Rav answered, I'll never forget, this is beautiful. He said, if it's medicine sold over the counter, you cannot take it in Shabbat. If you need a prescription, you can take it. That's the way the Rav Paskin halacha l'maisa. Amazing. That is such a sharp, insightful answer. Now, obviously, if someone has a terrible headache and they're going to lie down and they need two aspirins, they're allowed, even though it's not prescription medicine. But rule of the thumb, if you feel okay, you just feel a little indisposed, that's what I do. I don't take medicine. If it's antibiotics, absolutely. 10 days, there isn't the rub in the world, the Talmud Chacham who will not paskin. You have to do what your doctor tells you and take the antibiotics 10 straight days. But the Rav's Hagdor is magnificent. If you need a prescription, you have to take it. If you don't need a prescription, the chances are you don't. Okay, so it plays a role. But I want to tell you, what you're touching upon, I'm going to touch upon in great detail when I deal with Psak Halacha, Halacha L'maisa. It's not easy. These are flexible questions. The Rabbanan by its nature is very flexible, and the Rabbanan itself can change colors in confluence with the situation under discussion. And I'm going to give you many examples of that when we deal with Pesach. Right, fine, call it what you want. But this example from the Rabban and the Rambam is fantastically interesting. Of course, here you're actually taking the St. John's bread out of the category of a tree and making it a vegetable. How can you do that? Because it's the rabbi. Larry, remind me, I have the box for you in the car. Zev is here, Jay is here, Evan is here, Michael Ocean is not in the class, Nathan is here, Avram Goldman's wife is not feeling well, Jason is here, Mark is here, Shlomo is here, Uri is missing, and that is bad. Yaakov Kermeyer, missing and unaccounted for. Sick, Refuah Shleima. Gad Dishi is missing. Oy vey. Jacob Rosenthal, Eli Schick, Jake Pansner, Avi Baumel, Danny Green. Hi, Yaakov Elish. Okay. Gentlemen, there's no shiur next week. I'm going to the States tomorrow evening, Bezrat Hashem. Just pray that I should have good strength because I'm zapped and I have to go in. The only advantage is I'm not doing any major speaking or teaching the next week. But I have a lot to do, a lot of commitment for January that I have to work out, and I need a lot of strength. And so there won't be class next Sunday, and there won't be the Rabbi Soloveitchik course Tuesday, but we'll pick up again 2 weeks from today. Because Rav Hashem, we only miss 1 week, and I started teaching in August, and I don't have any time to me, and we pick up Bezrat Hashem next week. I'm going for happy reasons. I have two weddings, and it's a very, very, very big smachot. With the Rabbi Soloveitchik course, I replanned the course for this year, and I'm giving a lot of new material. And I can tell you right now, I have one more lecture to go on the Salu Salu Ponu Derech. That's the end of all the Mushran Yomam Narayim. I turn around and I do a beautiful piece on Yom Kippur, viewed halachically, that people who heard it went crazy. And in the last volume of Divrei Hashkafa, it's been written up and written up and written up, but the Ma'of is lost, unfortunately. Then I'm doing Tisha B'Av and why we have to fast Bizman Hazer. And then I'm going into the Rav's Hashkafa personal statements. Those Shiurim will cost $100 a piece. Because I greatly believe in the Gemara. Ashya the Megan, Megan Muggin Shafya. When a doctor heals for nothing, he's worth nothing. And I don't like students who don't appreciate that they're going up to Mount Sinai. And it's $100 a shir. Yaakov Levinstein will collect your IOU notes. Only those that sign will be allowed in. I have never taken money from a student, you know that. And I will rip up the notes at the proper time. But you have to feel, Ki'ilu, you put $100 on the table to hear the Rav's personal hashkafa. And I challenge anyone to tell me that the shir was not worth $1,000. You're getting a bargain. But right now, back here. I know I'm changing the whole format. I worked it all out of my mind because I want to do something so special, and God privileged me. I uncovered certain things. That's why I told Yaakov last night not to take notes, because what I did last night, I was pulling out of a major paper, you understand, for my purposes. Last night, I wanted to say what I wanted to say. I wanted to praise Mizrahi and rip the hell out of a Guder and Meimad. But it's not nice to come in and do that, so I took Divrei Torah from the Rebbe. You heard what I said to the people, that even if they don't like my Ashtafel, they'll like the Divrei Torah. But you have no idea what I did to the Rebbe's Torah machine. But for that audience, I couldn't give a proper shir. You know, I had to give what I gave, but to give what I have, I would have, 4 hours, and they would have been bored stiff. They would have lynched me. Now, watch this. So, what do we say? When it comes to Adin Darabanan and Jason, this is what I want to leave you with today. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I will give you much more detail on it. And Jason, again, when all is said and done, you're going to see that the unterste Shur in Psak Halacha is that it may be, it's up to the Posek. You'll see, on the rabbinic level. You'll see. I'll give you source after source. But this is a source in Rishonim, that here the minhag could absolutely shape the halacha and even slightly change the original din derabanan because the people wanted it a certain way. And it's sort of, if I made the analogy, it's not exactly the same, Jason, but the analogy on a theoretical level holds weight. Gezeira eina tzibi cholom la modba, the gezeira is mitbatalet me'alav. Okay. Now I'll show you something amazing. We'll come back to Rabbeinu Tam. One of the most terrible problems we have halachically, and this is an entire lecture unto itself, but I'm just alluding to it, divorce is a necessary evil. We have divorce in the Torah. All of you understand it's a mitzvah kiyumit, not a mitzvah chiyuvit. This is divorce. Now, unfortunately, many times when there's a divorce, the people hate each other. And this created terrible halachic problems. Why? What would happen, and we have already sources in Chazal and into the Rishonim, the Gaonim, the Rishonim, very simple. A man would give his wife a divorce. This is the wife he courted and loved. And he was a yeshiva college grad, she was a Stern college graduate, and everything looked so beautiful. And 5 years later, they hate each other's guts. So he divorces her. But he wants to take revenge against this woman that ate his heart out, that ruined his reputation, that besmirched his good name, that robbed his money. How does he take revenge? Nope. What's the classic way? Motzilaz al haget. Gets hold of the get, and he changes a letter, and he says the get was not kasher. Now all of you know the haramim going back to Rabbeinu Geshen, Rabbeinu Tam. If you are motzi laz on a get, you are in chayrim. Because motzi laz means, Jay, what are you saying? When she remarries, what are you saying? She's an adulteress? And the kids of Mamzerim. So this is a very, very serious matter that the Rishonim had to deal with. Now, can anyone tell me what Minhag Yisrael is today? We've been doing it already for a few hundred years. It's an amazing thing. The minute the get is given, you don't rip it up, but you cut the get like diagonally one way, diagonally the other way. You turn it into like an accordion cut. And that way, it can no longer be motzi laz. Because you've invalidated the get 1 minute after it's given. What's he going to say? The get is ripped? Sure, the rabbi ripped it. The word is no good? Sure, the rabbi who gave the get, ruined the get. We do it purposely, so you can never be motzi lazam the get. In addition, who keeps the get? The rabbi, the bacon, keeps the get. The woman is given a ketav p'turin, a ketav of a get. She was given a get. She's now able to remarry, but she does not get the original get. Now, the Rishonim were very choshesh for this problem. And we have a source in the Shiltei Giborim to the Mordechai, on the Mordechai, on Gittin. You know what I'm talking about. The Mordechai was the Talmud of the Maram Mi-Wittenberg. The Shiltei Giborim is on the Mordechai. Mesechet Gittin, number 444. Subdivision Aleph in the Shiltei Giborim, in the standard Vilna Rome Shas. Daf Zayin Amid Bet. And listen to this. How do you write a get? And here you come in to a very delicate problem. The problem of names. All of you recognize the problem immediately. There is no one in this class without many different names. As a matter of fact, there's probably no one here with as many names as I have to have. Arnold Edward, Arnie, Aharon Yitzchak, which is my real name. It's not a simple problem. So now, there are two ways to do it. One way is to write your main name, which again is a machloket. What is your main name? I would like to believe it's the name, your Hebrew name, Aharon Yitzchak. Or perhaps it's the name that all your mother and father and your wife call you by. By my wife, I have many names with my wife. Beyond Donnie, I can't even start to tell you why. And each name has a history, but Bruce is another name, which I've been answering to for 32 years already. So it's a whole crowd. It's our neighbor in Philadelphia. It's 32 years. Because the first year we lived in the Bronx. Afterwards, we lived our next door neighbor was Spruce. Well, if he was Spruce, I became Bruce. So I've been answering to that name too. And it's also people, my close talmidim, who've heard my wife and I in conversation, know that I also answered to the name Bruce. It also becomes a name. If I leave a message for a Talmud, the message, let's say Danny Rothenberg, I call the graduate school of City University and I want to speak to Professor Rothenberg. I can't say the Rebbe called, the black woman sitting there. And I say, tell Professor Rothenberg that Dr. Arnold left the message. All right? That's also a name. What name do you write? Or is it Arnold? That's the name I'm known by. Arnie. So it's a real problem. And it seems there were two minhagim. One minhag was to spell out the names, which is what we do today. The other minhag was to write your basic name and say, and all other names that he's known by. In other words, allude to the fact that Evan may have one basic name and three nicknames and an English name and a chves and nicknames and variations. Two different minhagim. So in this source it says, Rabbeinu Tam used to write in the get, Ploni the Mitkurier Ploni. Listen to this. He used to spell out the names. And it means he would write Aaron Yitzchak, who's called Arnold, who's also known as Arnie, who's also known as Bruce. He would have to write all the names, and he would spell it out. By the way, the Mitkarya is a whole machloket when you use Mishkarya, when you use Mechuna. I'm not even getting involved in that. It's a whole machloket. Look into the Sri Deyesh. It could very well be that Mitkarya is when it's a Hebrew name, and Mechuna is when it's an English name or a diminutive form. So, fine, what's wrong with that? One of the other Rishonim, Rabbi Yosef Meyolins, one of the Balei Tosfos, right? Rabbi Yosef Meyolins went out against Rabbeinu Tam and accused Rabbeinu Tam of the most horrible sin, that you are motzi laz on the Gittin HaRishonim? Shelona hagul lichtov, only ploni in kol shum v'chanicha di'itlein. He says, it's a famous source, he says to Rabbeinu Tam, you're motzi laz. All the Gittin, from time immemorial, how were they written? They were written, ploni, and any name, and any reference that he has, any nickname, in other words, we subsume it, that's all. This is your basic name, and we don't want to get involved in spending two lines of the get with 50 different names. So we say, Ploni, and Aaron Yitzchak, and we allude to the fact, yes, you understand, yeah, and it gets, you have to identify the person. By the way, the Rav was very makpid bizman hazeh to write last names into the get. You understand? The Rishonim, we don't have any sources for writing last names. No one had last names. The Rav was very makpid, because the Rav held that bizman hazeh, your last name is the greatest identifying feature of the individual. Our last name. This is, some of us are only known by our last names. You went to school. How many teachers in high school called you by your first name? In college, how many teachers called you by your first name? Think around now. So many people know you, but maybe the majority know you by your last name, not by your first name. So the Rav is very mocked, but this was the machloket, and this is Rabbi Yosef Meir Lyons accused him of that. If you're going to be machman, you're going to be fancy, and you're going to spell out hamachuna, hamachuner, or hamitkaryeh, mitkaryeh, whatever form he used, you are motzilaz on thousands of gittin that were given since time immemorial, where all they wrote was called Shem V'Chanicha Di Islay. Now, Rabbeinu Tam's answer has been quoted a million times over. And Jay, you start to see part of the answer to your question. Rabbeinu Tam says, and this is our friend Rav Avadia quotes, does this all the time, Minhag Zehu Gehenim. Transpose the letters. Have you ever heard that? As far as I know, this is one of the earliest sources for that rabbinic aphorism, that a minhag can be gehenim. And if you have the minhag wrong, you are creating a gehenim. Rav Ovadia did this at one famous rally where Shas was having this tremendous rally, and he starts praising Ari Deri as the Tzarek Hadar, and he calls the Chokrei HaMishtara, the Chokrim that are checking out this man, Choker, transposed, is Korach. And let me tell you, the audience went crazy with joy. And it's a good word. Choker is Korach. Minig is Gehenim. And Rabbeinu Tam says, quote, Minig zehu Gehenim l'mafreya, im shaitim nohagu, chachamim lo nohagu, va'afilu minhag hagun, ein Oker halacha. And here Rabbeinu Tam is very clear that even a fine minhag, but if the halacha is different, minhag can never change the halacha. Halacha kama v'kama where the minhag is not correct. And Rabbeinu Tam felt very strongly ad kidei kach that he called the minhag of not spelling out the names is a minhag which is equal to Gehenim. And this Rabbeinu Tam is a tremendous basic source. A minhag has to be taken within context, has to be analyzed. Your stump can't come along and say, this is our minhag, this is what we do. A minhag has to make sense, you have to understand what you're doing, and it has to be halachically sound. But a minhag to get us involved with sveika d'oraita, whether the get is good or not, such a minhag can be gehenim and is not accepted. And this is the Tshuvan HaRash that I quoted before, Klal Nun Hei Ot Yud, where the Rush says clearly, the mokam she'ein rifayon bahalacha, ein lacha lalechet acharecha minhag, shehu keneged ahalacha. It's only where you have doubt. But gentlemen, since time immemorial, Jews have prayed men and women separate. All of you are familiar with the sugyas in Masechet Sukkah. I just heard it on the radio here. They were having a talking show, and some woman called in, and she quoted the Gemara. This woman was a genius. All of you are familiar with the sugyas and the Beit HaMikdash, all the experiments they made, the men on top, the women on the bottom, the women on top, the men on the bottom. No matter what they did, they had trouble with the men and women. But they made every attempt to keep the men and women separate. So all the conservative movement, Minhag, Fukhazi, and Lonaviyim, it does not apply, if I may quote the Rush, She'ein Rifyon Bahalacha. And finally, I want to show you something else too that is amazing, because it's by a Rishon, and yet it's so contemporary, it's exactly Aaron Rakefet analyzing the conservative movement. Again, it's a person we quoted before, but it's a different Sheila. I'm quoting the Rashbash again, Rabbi Shimon ben Duran. I'm quoting the Rashbash, And I'm quoting She'ila Taf Yud Tet. It's on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amid Bet. And the Rashbash too gets involved with Minhag, and he says, if we're going to follow every Minhag that the people say, this is a Minhag. Mitnecha minig banu levatel devar ha'isur, yivatlenu kol hisurim echad li echad, yinimtza kol ha'torah b'teila. And that's amazing. That's the Rashbash writing 600 years ago. If you're going to follow the masses, and they're going to say, this is a minhag, this is what we have to do, this is what we've been doing, we don't care what the Torah says, we don't care what the halacha is, this is our minhag. Well, if you listen to the masses, one by one, you're going to knock out every Issa. Ultimately, you'll have no Torah left. V'nimtza kol ha-Torah b'teila. And this is the conservative movement. This is what I told you last week. Solomon Schechter's wildest dreams, I can't believe he would have permitted eating hot fish in a treif restaurant. Doesn't make sense to me. Does not make sense to me. In his wildest dreams. In his wildest dreams, he wouldn't have permitted abolishing Tarat Mishpacha because we have a bathtub today and a shower in every house. His wildest dreams. Doesn't make sense to me. Riding to Shul on Shabbat because it gives us Jewish identity and it's a mitzvah rabbah and everything that's written in the responsum that permits the riding to Shul. I don't believe in a million years Solomon Schechter would have permitted it. Can't understand it. And this is the Rashbash v'nimtzeit ha-Torah chas v'chalila b'teila. It's absolutely right. So what I'm saying is, notice, when it comes to a minhag by Haruvim and when to Maisa, fine. Give the Rambam his credit. Give the Raibit his credit. Jews are concerned with taking off Trumat and Maisrat from Haruvim. Let the minhag play a role. We can change the Din d'Rabbanan. When it comes to abolishing Yahadut and say this is the minig and this is what they do and chas v'chalila. Now, I can tell you in parentheses, this was one of the Rav's biggest machlokot in the early 30s. There are two versions that come down to us. I'll tell you the version I heard from the Rav with my own ears, and I'll tell you the version Rabbi Lewittis relates, who was Rabbi Lewittis, who is a member of Yeshiva College's first graduating class, 1932. Not a youngster anymore, was rabbi in Montreal for many years, but his start was in Boston in the 30s. He was very close to the Rav. And he remembers the Rav as a youngster in Boston. And it's two different versions, but the story is, what I heard from the Rav is very simple. How did the Rev come to Boston? The Rev came to Boston. It wasn't those days. No Orthodox Jew, with few exceptions, had a rabbi. Who needed a rabbi? In Europe, shuls had rabbis. In Israel, shuls have rabbis. What happened? A few shuls would get together. And they would hire a rabbi to be like what they call the chief rabbi. And the rabbi would go back and forth, down in the various shuls. His main income was not from the shuls, it came from the Schlachthäuser and from Gibbs before Hanukkah, before Purim. So the rabbi comes into the shul. I even have the name at home. I have the exact name of the shul. And it's the rabbi's first yontiv in America. The first time that Yontif falls on Shabbat. Now, all of you know that in America, in Chutz Laretz, perhaps outside of Yerushalayim and Petach Tikva, we don't daven every day. In America, in Chutz Laretz, we don't even daven on Shabbat. Why not? Because Bizman Hazeh and the Galus, we're not in a feeling of Simcha. So when Yontif falls on Shabbat, logically speaking, you should absolutely duchen. Because you not only have the Simchat Yom Tov, but you have the joy of Shabbat, two beautiful reasons why Tadukhin. And gentlemen, all of you know that in many shuls there's Amharatzit, where they really believe you cannot Tadukhin because it's Chilul Shabbat. This is the Minhag. The Rav came in, Yontif fell on Shabbat, and the Rav said you absolutely have to Tadukhin. And the rabbis in America, you know what the rabbi's position was in the 30s. You could be the Rav, you could be a Soloveitchik, you could be a Chaim Sinanikel. The Balabatan told them, Rav Soloveitchik, Macha Shvaig. We are telling you, our minig is we don't duchen on Shabbat. This is the minig. 20 years ago, they didn't duchen 40. So the Rav said, but your minig is wrong. It's minhag gehenim, like Rabbeinu Tam. You know that the Balabatan threw the Rav out, and the Rav never davened again in that shul. Rabbi Lewittis' version is also very interesting. It didn't happen when Yom Tov fell on Shabbat, but it happened on Simchat Torah. Simchat Torah? Musaf? Many shuls in America, the people are drunk, they don't duchen. Came Musaf, the Rav said to the Kohanim, they were sober, they were fine. The Rav said, go up and duchen. The Balabatim jumped on the Rav and wanted the Mekayim and him Dalid Mitot Beitin. And they told him, what are you, crazy? No one has ever duchened on Musaf Simchas Torah in this shul for the last 100 years. And they threw the Rav out. He never could come back again to that shul. Now, the Rav told us, I heard the first version, and I have to tell you, the Rav said, boys, he said, I was young, I was an idealist, I was wrong. You cannot teach Judaism by yelling and shouting. What I should have done was gradually attempted to educate the people. Teach them. So the first time that Shabbat and Yom Tov coincided in Maplewood, Ani Rothkopf gave his shiur and tried to educate. And ein hachinami, I have to tell you, the Balabatim listened to me, they duchen, the younger Balabatim understood me, some of them were YU graduates, the older Balabatim thought I was a loony, thought I was crazy, thought I was a Mechalel Shabbos, and this is what we're talking about, Minhag. And if you're going to follow the minig of the people, and these are from people already, in shul, but they swear to you, we don't duchen on Musaf. And this is Minhag, this is Kehenim, and this is the Rashbaj, that one by one, Isurim will disappear. Beautiful, beautiful. There'll be nothing left of Yiddishkeit. It's exactly the words I said on Solomon Schechter. Okay. But let me go another step further. However, here we come to Frumkeit. And here, when it's a question of taking on yourself an additional Isa, here we're ready, you can take on a new Minhag. Our problem with Minhag Gehenim is to be Matir, something where we will know Hegel Chumra. To be Matir, not Duchening, when Me'ikir Hadin, you have to duchen. To be matir, writing a get for chol shumvach aniche de yitle without spelling it out as Rabbeinu Tam did. But what about le'asar tamuta? Look into the Rambam. Hilchot shvitat isur. The laws of Yom Kippur. Perek gimel halachi gimel. So the Rambam paskins mi shera'a keri bizman hazeh b'Yom Kippur. What about if a person had a seminal admission on Yom Kippur? Or Sulo Lirchotz Kol Gufo Olitfo. You can't wash, can't wash, can't go to mikvah. She'ein HaTovel Bizman HaZeh Tohar Mipnei Tumat Meitz. She'ein HaRikitza Mikeri Litvile Bizman HaZeh Ela Minhag. She'ein Minhag Levatel Davaha Asur. The Rambam says something very fascinating. Bizman hazeh, you understand, al pi kabbalah, it's a horrible thing, a person became a Balkeri on Yom Kippur. This is the day he wants Tahara. So it seems that long ago there was a minhag, you could go to Mikvah on Yom Kippur to be metai yourself from the keri, but that's only when you could be metai yourself. Bizman Hazeh, we can go to Mikvah 100 times over. Do we remain tamei? Absolutely. Tumat tamei. We're never able to get rid of tumat tamei, Bizman Hazeh. If that's the case, going to mikveh really accomplishes nothing. And therefore, we cannot go to mikveh on Yom Kippur. Ve'ein minhag, you cannot say it's a minhag, I have to get rid of the keri, it's horrible, I must absolve myself, I must go into a mikveh, I must be ritually pure, this is our minhag. By the way, among Hasidim you'll find already the trend that people who were going out of their minds and then they couldn't take it and they were caught up. You know, it depends. Certain Hasidut has a very extreme approach towards a similar mission, to being a Baal Keri. Sometimes to me, it's overwhelming and a little bit abnormal. When I read some of the Breslava material, I get a little bit frightened and I understand right away why the Baal Tshuva run to Breslav so easily. It's very extreme. I don't know if it's healthy. I certainly personally wouldn't educate that way. Be it as it may, this is the Rambam, that you can't go to Mikvah, he says. You cannot be Matar in Issa. It's an Issa Lichotzet Gufo, and Bizman Hazeh, the Mikvah has no Chalais. Going to Mikvah on Yom Kippur is Rochetzet Gufo. It would only be Mikvah if it could be Matar you. If it could be Matar you, then we could go back to the Kohen Gadol and find precedents, etc. But if it's just Lichotzet Gufo, it's Davar Asa. And a Minhag cannot be Mavato, something that's Asa. Very fascinating. By the way, we have a minhag to go Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, but that minhag has nothing to do with real tefillah. We understand ourselves when we go, we're going, it's symbolic, it's not halachic. You follow me? It's a symbolism. All of us go into the mikvah and come out of the mikvah just as tamei as we went in, we're still tamei made. But it's a symbolism. It's from Hasidei Ashkenaz. It's not like a woman going to mikvah. When a woman goes to mikvah monthly, there's a tremendous halachic change because before she went to mikvah, she was an ida. When she comes out of the mikvah, she's muteret labala. However, the tumah v'tara is not affected. She's tamei made before, she's tamei made afterwards. And I can tell you in parentheses, this I did hear the Rav say. He tweeted a class in the 1970s, and it was about saying shir, and when to say shir, and it was the day before Erev Yom Kippur. And the Rav said, oh, yes, I'll say shir. He says, I know you boys will be busy Erev Yom Kippur, he says, but I, Baruch Hashem, I'm not going to be busy like you. I don't go to mikveh Erev Yom. I never went. The Rav is telling the class, you know, and these guys, Baruch Hashem, if I would tell the class I never went to mikveh, they'd throw me out. They wouldn't let me be a Rebbe. But the Rav, we took it from. What could we do? I don't think I've ever missed going to mikveh Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, but nevertheless, I know when I go, I'm going on minhag. It's not a mikveh. It's not. I'm alumned enough to understand. I'm not changing the chalois in my body. But it's a symbolism. I dip myself 3 times and I tuck a feel different when I come out of the mikveh. But I'm smart enough to know it may be a psychological difference. It's not a halachic difference. But look what the Rambam says at the end. Lavatela ta'isa chas v'chalila. But a minig lasa tamuta, you're allowed. And this will explain to you why we don't eat rice on Pesach, why we don't eat legumes on Pesach, why many people don't use make kidney up in Pesach. Rabbanu Shel Olam, show me one source not to eat rice if it's an open Gemara that you're allowed to eat rice, that rice is not machmir. It's an open Gemara, Rabbanu Shel Olam. Show me one source not to eat kidney up on Pesach. Is there anything chametzdik about kidney up? Show me one source not to eat kidney up. As a matter of fact, until today, we're not certain why Ashkenazim don't eat kidney. You know what I'm talking about? Until today, there's no one in this class who can tell me for sure why not. I know the topic. I can give you many reasons. The truth of the matter is, we don't know for sure. But this is a minig. Minig lasar tamuta. But not the opposite. Don't take a minig suddenly and throw out all of halacha that you have to go to mikvah on Yom Kippur if you have a similar admission. I admit those of you who are Chabadnikim have a problem with what I just taught. I admit that. I don't have an answer for you. I've told you more than once. The only time in my life I went to Mikvah on Shabbat, I told you the story, when I was a kid and I was at Chabad, I saw everything. I was very fortunate that I have within me, I'm an FFB, but I'm also a BT. I have the best of both worlds because of my unique upbringing and where I was born and when I was born, etc. I was very fortunate. So when I was a teenager, I was seeking out truth. And I went to every place in New York, Peri Vadas and Chaim Berlin and Lubavitch and Satmar, and I went into Temple Emmanuel Lahavdil, and I went into JTS Lahavdil. I wanted to see everything and know that if I choose MTA, I'm choosing, or Lakewood at that time, I was pointing from MTA to Lakewood, I'm choosing Meiritzoni Hatov. As a matter of fact, my niece is marrying a Lakewood boy, and this coming Sunday, I'm going to see what Lakewood looks like today and try to compare it to the Lakewood I remember in the early 50s. But I went into Lubavitch for Shabbos. I can tell you, I don't have time. The stories that I got out of that Shabbos lasted me until today. And the Divrei Torah was just this time of the year before Hanukkah. And the Rebbe, they told the Rebbe in the audience, or a few kids from YU, so the Rebbe geared his Torah towards, it was meritic. It was in front of thousands of people. And like the Rebbe was speaking to us. And I'm going to say over some of the things I heard from the Rebbe. I'm going to say over in Hanukkah here, I have to speak in the center of the city on a Thursday. I'm going to say over certain things that I heard from the Rebbe. But that morning, suddenly, before davening, everyone says, we're going to mikveh now. I say, what? What do you mean? You're going to mikveh? You go to mikveh? You go to mikveh on Shabbos? How can you wash your whole body? What are you talking about? You can't do it. It's us. Mikveh's like a bath. And while I'm talking, they strip me naked. And the next thing I know, I'm still talking. I'm gulping down the water. I'm in the mikveh on Shabbos. And already I saw, if you're lost, you're lost. I went under already like every other guy, and I came up, and how do you dry your hair, and what do you do? You do like we do, we shake it out, we don't rub it out, you don't dunk it down, you just flat, you go with a wet head. What's the difference? You're shluchim mitvein that's cooking, you're not gonna catch cold. You understand? If you go to mikvah, they have a Kabbalah, and I have to say it, chatai ani maskeh hayom, I went against this Rambam on a Shabbos in Lubavitch. But, may that be my worst sin. One step further. I never told you that story. I must have told it a few years ago. Forget it, right? I mean, I don't think I can tell the story to the girls too easily, but it's a true story. What can I do? Okay. I learned so much. I learned something that Shabbos. Let me just tell you one other thing. I was a kid, so you know, I see all the Chabadnikim and everyone, the Chabad and beard. And right away, I see beards and black identified with a good at Israel. So I say to my host, what's the difference between you and Agudas Yisrael, which was just going on the map then? His answer was the most brilliant answer I heard in my life. He said, look, I'll be honest with you. If Mizrahi would build, I was a Mizrahi, I had a B'nai Akiva kid, if Mizrahi would build 50 mikvot, the Aguda would passel them. If the Aguda would build 50 mikvot, Mizrahi would passel them. The Rebbe would send a telegram of congratulations to the Mizrahi and to the Yaguda. Each one would be congratulated for building 50 mikvot. And that was the most beautiful description of Lubavitch I ever heard. And it was so true for so many decades. Okay. You know where you find this? Not only in the Rambam. There's a beautiful Ritbah to the Sugim Psachim Dafnun Aleph Amir Aleph. Now, all of you know, what sugi are we talking about there? We're talking about, of course, the whole question of Makom Shenahagu to do work on Erev Pesach, whether you're allowed to do work Erev Pesach. Not allowed to do work Erev Pesach. This is the basic sugya of Minhag HaMakom. In all of Shas, when you get involved with Yontif Sheni, this is the basic sugya. It's the only place we have Makarat that may be applicable to Yontif Sheni. I'm talking Makom Shenahagu. You go from here to there. Here you do work. There you don't do work. What do? You know you're going back. You know you're not going to go back. You're changing communities. This is Daf Nun Aleph, Daf Nun Bet, Daf Nun, Nun Aleph, Nun Bet, the famous sugya in Masechet Pesachim, Makom Shenahagu. Look into the Ritbah. The Ritbah quotes his Rebbe, Rabbi Aaron Alevi, Rabbi Aaron in Barcelona. And my Rebbe, the Katav Odzal, Fahadava Pashud, She'ein Mishnatainu, V'chol Gemara V'yuvda, Ela B'minag L'Hachmiya, Abal Ha'minag L'Hakel, Le'olam Ein Choshishin Lo, V'afilu Hayal Pi Gedol Le'olam, Kol Shenira Batzad Disa L'Chacham Bal Horah She'yir B'yamim Hachem, She'ein Lanu Ela Shofet Shehu B'yameinu. What was said here by the Ritbah in four lines, this is a world of concept
a world of psak. And what does it mean? And I'll end off the class with this today. What does it mean? When you have the paskin, you can have a minhag for Dari Darat. If the Morei Hara feels that this minhag can lead to Isa, he can abolish the minhag. Minhag is always possible and can always be passed on when it leads to more Yiddishkeit and not to less Yiddishkeit. The minute you feel a minhag is leading to less Yiddishkeit, you have every right to abolish it. Aye, you can bring a proof that this minhag was from Morei Harat of Dorei Dorot, of what he calls Kedolei Olam. However, gentlemen, what the Ritba added on in the name of Rabbaran Halevi, and we're going to come to this time and again in very dramatic lectures that are yet to come, Be'ezrat Hashem. Gentlemen, ultimately, it's the Posek Paskening today in 1994 who has to make the decision. And you have to Paskin on the basis of what you see here and now. And you have to Paskin on the basis of your considerations, because it's your ballpark, it's your Torah. You are passing it on. You are responsible. What was, was. But now you have to Paskin. And you have a right. If it was a minhag, a wonderful minhag, but you feel that Bizman HaZeh, it leads to a Tzad Issa, you have every right to abolish it. And now I can come back and I'll give you a simple example. Ein Achinami. There may have been many shuls where they didn't duchen when Shabbat fell with Yom Tov. You'll find in the Mishnah Berurah sources. It was on Ratzit. There was a minhag. They looked at it like Chilul Shabbos. Of course, it's wrong. So they didn't duchen. Could very well be in Europe. It didn't matter. In the United States of America, where people no longer know their Kohanim, where the Kedushat Kohen is so kalush, so klusha, so weak, where lo aleinu, Kohanim are marrying Gerushat Maisim b'chol yom, even in Orthodox circles. I've heard so many stories already. Once I started researching the topic, and once the problem appeared on the surface, it's frightening. Kohanim with Grushot, to a lesser degree with Giyarot, could very well be Bizman HaZeh, we have to go out of our way to sanctify the Kohen, and Adarabba V'Yadarabba insist that he duchen when Yom Tov falls on Shabbat. Chas v'chalila, we should mizalzil on Kedushat Kohuna, Bizman HaZeh, on Simchas Torah, Musaf Tan. Have to take a different approach. I, the minig was, they got drunk and they made kiddush and they got high. Chas v'chalila, bizman hazeh, we should take that approach. Can very well be. In shuls today, where to begin, where there's so many horrendous problems with decorum, could very well be. Minig Yisrael was, you got high on Simchas Torah, you tie taliyot together, the kids went wild. Bizman hazeh, Simchas Torah has to be treated with seriousness and solemnity. We can't afford to turn a shul into a circus. That could very well be. This is what the Ritba is talking about. But the ultimate vort of the Ritba, and we're going to talk about this so much next time, is that Ein l'dayan ela mashenav ra'ot. Ein lanu ela hashofet asheyeyeh bayamim ha'hem. Ultimately, you bear the responsibility. This is your Misora. You're passing it on. It's what something I said an hour ago. And this hit me between the eyes. That I was passed on a Misora of Bris, and of Mir, and of Raten, and of Eastern Europe, and my Rebbeim Yetzor the Chafetz Chaim, and the Yetzor Reb Chaim Mibrisk. And I was passed on an entire different Misora. And I'm passing on to Misora what we saw with the Rav, and what we saw with Rav David Lifshitz. I spoke about Rav David Lifshitz last night. I told a beautiful story. It's a powerful story that I told last night on Rav David Lifshitz. And I was trying to explain the Mizrahi point of view and the uniqueness of every human. Rav David would carry on with his best students. And I know it as a fact. It was with my brother. It happened with my brother. Rabbi Dr. Rasner writes about it. Be a London, be a Rosh Yeshiva, keep on studying. And then you would say, Rebbe, I'm going into medical school. And he would make believe he's upset, and then he would carry on. And then he would say, you don't want to change your mind? You would say, no, Rebbe, I want to be a Ben Torah, but I want to be a doctor.
then he suddenly his whole demeanor would change and he would say, you better be the best doctor possible. And that was a fantastic approach. And I agree with him 1,000,000%. And this is where we're passing it. You're doing it. You can't look backwards a minute, thousands of years. Fine. Bizman Hazer, you feel it's leading to Isa. You feel the generation can't handle it. You feel the generation is misplaying the minhag. Then you have every right to get up and to say, this minhag is wrong. We can no longer live with it. Our minhag is only le'asar tamutar at certain times, not lahatir et isha. And that's the ultimate concept of every shofet in his generation at his time. Okay, I'm not finished. I have yet one nachlet shivet to do, but I have to do it properly, and then we're going to really start moving into Klali Hapsak. But let me come back. What did we accomplish today? Be'ezrat hanotein la'yev koach. What did we accomplish today? Covered a world of material. The Yuntas Teshura being that in a Devar Yisarana, the right level, Chas v'chalila, a minhag can play no role. On a rabbinic level, it may very well be that a minhag can establish the halacha differently than the rabbinic gezeira or takana originally envisioned it. We also said when it comes to Fuchazi Mayama Devar, when you really in that had a paskin, then you have every right to go lekula lechumra. What's interesting, the machlok, it's Rashi and Tosfot and Menachat and the Yazarua, both on that topic of the tefillin being sewn up, something we would never do today. Baruch Hashem, today, the only time I ever saw this, I once put a pair of tzitzit in Israel, and the tzitzit of an Ali had ripped, and some woman's tied it together, either woman, whoever works in the factory, and of course, with tzitzit, that doesn't help. You tied it together, that strand was gone. Of course, if you have 7 strands instead of 8, it's still kasher. But tying it together is not going to help. But with the Ritzua, could very well be from the Gemara. We can be making like Tosfot. But Bizman Hazeh, Fuk Hazeh, Baruch Hashem, we can afford another few shekel. We buy your Ritzua. The Ritzua would only get better and thinker with more chumris and the face with more hidurim. We don't have a problem. Now, and this is the Yazaru. And then we also spoke about the cap and Mordechai Kaplan with his umbrella. It's a fascinating topic. Now, then, well, I showed you the Rabbeinu Tam and the Machloket with the Rima Yorleans, and where the Rabbeinu Tam gets involved with Minhag Ikul Gehenim, and that's not to answer Jay's question, although I have a lot more to say in the topic. And again, Rabbi Shlomo ben Rabbi Shimon, the Rashbash, which is an amazing collection of tshuva. There's so much in there that's fascinating. And he looks like he's writing, I can't believe it, 600 years ago, but he's writing, you know, the people, Lev, Hadam, Ram, and Urav. If you put it to a vote, if we believe in democracy, there will be nothing left of Yiddishkeit. And then I showed you the Rambam, very fascinating with the Yom Kippur and going to mikveh, and the Rambam says we cannot take a minhag to justify doing an Isa, although he says you would be able to take a minhag to justify assuring something that's mutter. And I showed you your Temafurash in the Ritbah, quoting Rabbeinu Aaron Halevi mi Batzalone, his Rebbe Gaon Yisrael Megadolis Harishonim Bisfarad, and he already says that when there's a tzadisa and a minhag, even if it just developed recently, even if it's something that they did for 100 years, and Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and everyone said it was wonderful and good, but the posek of 1994 is worried that this minhag may have a tzadisa in it, then you can asa that which was mutter, of course, not to be matir, that which was asa. So you see, minhag has so many variations, and is so amorphous, but one has to be a master of the halachic tradition, and you have to see it in totality, and this is what's the oraita, what's the rabbanan, and there's a lot of subjective evaluation involved when it's a din de rabbanan, and the posek feels, bizman hazer, this is isa, this is no good, this is doing harm, therefore we have to do it differently and abolish the minhag. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for your very kind participation. Be'ezra tanotein la'yav koach. I'll see you in 2 weeks' time. And until then, besorah tovot aleinu v'al kol Yisrael. Das v'danya.